books and accessible reading on RNIB Connect Radio. For everyone who loves books, this is Read On, the audiobook show on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to Read On. I'm Robert Kirkwood, and in a packed show, we'll be finding out about all the free books you can get this World Book Day from RNIB, and we'll chat to one of the authors of those books, Tom Palmer. All that on today's Read On.
Pokemon are creatures of all shapes and sizes, each with their own special abilities.
Do you have a dream? We all have dreams, don't we? The dream of a life that would be perfect for us, where we'd be happy and everything would be good.
A poem has the capability to conquer all hostility, to play a song of tranquility. A poem has the capability.
It's Bluey. Bluey lounges on a chair in the living room, wearing sunglasses and looking very cool.
World Book Day is all about celebrating the magic of books and reading. RNIB is proud to support its mission to give every child and young person a book of their own, making all the titles available in audio and braille. Here's three books for beginner readers. First up, Bluey's Little Book. Meet Bluey and Bingo and all their family, friends and toys.
Here come the grannies! Bluey and Bingo are driving their play car in the garden, dressed as old ladies. Lovely day for a drive, wouldn't you say, Rita? Sure is, Janet. At dinner time, Bluey uses a magic asparagus to turn her family into any animal she wants. Her dad, Bandit, turns into a donkey.
Eeyore!
Her little sister, Bingo, Dad, Bandit and her mum, Chili, turn into peacocks.
Brr, brr.
Bluey's Little Book, available in audio from RNIB. As is Barbara's Very Useful Guide to Moods. Here's author Nadia Shireen.
Hello, I'm Nadia Shireen and I'm an author and illustrator. My book, Barbara's Very Useful Guide to Moods, is a £1 book for World Book Day 2025. It's about a cat called Barbara who feels a lot of different emotions in one day. Barbara's actually already starred in another one of my books, which is called Barbara Throws a Wobbler. And in this book, she's very grumpy indeed. But in Barbara's Very Useful Guide to Moods, we see that she actually has plenty of other feelings too.
Meet Barbara the cat.
Hello.
And this is her very useful guide to moods. She knows a lot about them, because Barbara has lots of different moods every day. For example, this morning, when Barbara woke up, she was feeling groggy. Groggy is a sleepy feeling, like your head is full of cotton wool. But then she saw a sausage, which instantly made her happy. Happy is sausages, candy floss, smiling dogs. These are all things that can make people happy.
Kate Louise Okello, reading from Barbara's Very Useful Guide to Moods by Nadia Shireen. Available free from RNIB. And finally, for early readers, we have The Magic Balloon by Carol Anka.
My name is Carl Anker. I'm an author from London, and I've written the book The Magic Balloon. My new book follows three children, Toby, Reuben, and Rosa,
and they're playing football in the back garden. One day, someone kicks the ball over the fence, and they go off to investigate, and then they find a magic hot air balloon with names on their seats for all three of them. They get in the balloon, and they go on a magical adventure, looking at all the big sights around town. Then, after this magical journey ends, the balloon takes them back down to Earth, where they all have a great time.
It was a sunny day. Rosa was in her back garden playing football with her best friend Reuben and little brother Toby. It was their favourite game to play together.
Get ready for the goal of the year, called Reuben.
Not if I can help it, said Toby as he put on his goalkeeping gloves. Reuben kicked the football as hard as he could. Thwack!
Whoosh!
David Anthony Monteith, reading The Magic Balloon by Carol Anker. Blind and partially sighted children, and any children unable to read standard print due to a print impairment, are able to choose one free audio or braille book from the World Book Day list. Just call the RNIB helpline on 0303 123 9999, or email helpline@rnib.org.uk to get your free book.
You're listening to Read On, the audiobook show with Robert Kirkwood.
We'll have more free £1 Book Day books for older readers later on in the show. But for now, let's talk to our featured author. Before Tom Palmer became an author, one of his first ever jobs was working for RNIB, recording books for blind and partially sighted students. So he's very aware of the importance of accessibility. He's even judging this year's World Book Day writing competition from RNIB, which we'll hear more about in a future edition of Read On. But for now, well, Tom has written so many books, this interview barely scratches the surface. We'll talk about his World Book Day book, Rocky Takes the Lead, later on in the show. But for now, let's hear from the audio version of his latest book, Angel of Grasmere, From Dunkirk to the Fells. The audio version is narrated by Elaine Fellows.
Tom Fothergill walked fast up the steep and rocky path that ran along the side of the waterfall. She used her anger to force herself higher and higher until, gasping for breath, she reached the small lake at the top. Alone, apart from a single Herdwick sheep with its grey body and white face, Tom stood glaring at the water, then screamed, "They won't let me in the church!" Her voice skimmed over the surface, then echoed back off the steep side of the fell beyond. Silence now. No footsteps. No birdsong. No noises of the harvest being brought in down in the valley below. It seemed as if even the lapping of the water and the breath of the wind had paused. Tarn looked back to see two figures labouring up the path behind her. She leant against the abandoned stone-built refreshment hut that stood at the top of the climb. Then she turned to face the dark water again. Water as dark as her mood. Tarn was angry because right now, inside St. Oswald's Church in Grasmere, a congregation of men were attending a memorial service. A service for her brother Joss, killed in action at Dunkirk. No women or girls were allowed to attend. Just men. The first telegram from the army had said that Joss was missing in action, but then one of the men he'd served with wrote to say they believed he was dead. They'd been with him on the deck of the ship that had rescued them from the advancing German army at Dunkirk. The ship had been hit by a bomb from a diving Stuka aeroplane, and Joss had fallen overboard in the chaos that followed. One line of the letter stuck in Tarn's mind. "I am sorry to report that I saw Joss fall into the sea, then go under."
That's Elaine Fellows reading from Angel of Grasmere, From Dunkirk to the Fells, by my guest Tom Palmer, who joins me now. Now, your books, you've published over 60 books, and they seem to fall into two general areas, football and historical fiction. And I believe it was reading about football that really got you into writing.
Yeah, and I really struggled with reading as a child and until I was like 16, 17, really. And what got me into reading initially was not books, but newspapers and magazines and a precursor of the internet called CFAX. I used to read a lot about football on there, and gradually I built up my reading and I started to love reading. And then once I started to love reading, I sort of kind of fancied being a writer as well. So it all came from being a reluctant reader initially, getting into reading through football, and then wanting to be like the people who wrote the books that I read.
Now, many of your books are available in audio, and you are familiar with the world of audiobooks, as we had very similar jobs back in the day.
Yeah, absolutely. I My second ever job, my first ever job, I was a milkman, but my second ever job was a government scheme to try and get sort of young people into work, like in the mid 1980s, and it was at Leeds University at the Recording Centre for the Blind, and the job was to record books on audio cassettes for the students, the blind and visually impaired students at Leeds University. My job was I had to read some of the books, but I was also like we had volunteers coming in and they'd read, and my job was to sort of monitor them, do any corrections and top and tail the cassettes. And I really loved it, and I did that job for a year, and it gave me a lot of confidence, and so I've always had RNIB close to my heart since then.
You'd been recording the books onto tape as well, wouldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Reading them on, is that something you did?
Well, we were in a sort of weird hybrid where we would record them on computer, we'd record them digitally, but then we'd put them onto tape to send them
Right.
out. Obviously, those days are long gone now, but
Yeah.
yeah, we've moved from analog to digital. But working with blind and partially sighted people sort of inspired a character in your full play series.
It did, yeah. My first ever children's fiction that got published called Foul Play, and it's about a boy who wants to be a detective, and he's a football detective, so he investigates crimes in the world of football, like murdered managers and kidnapped players and stuff like that. And I needed a way for like a 14, 15-year-old lad to have read a lot of adult crime fiction, and it sort of came quite quickly to me that like if he'd read a lot of like adult crime fiction to his dad, because his dad was blind or visually impaired, such as me doing my job at the RNIB Recording Centre, that'd be a really good way. So I sort of invented the idea that his dad was blind and that he read books to him every night, and that was the reason that he'd read lots of crime fiction, and that then he uses the skills that he's learned from the literary crime writers and detectives, and to help him solve his own crimes. And that was the premise. And it, as well as being sort of a nod to my previous job at the RNIB, it was about, for me, it was about how reading can empower you. Like reading has really empowered me in my life. And I think for Danny, the character in this series, he's empowered by the skills he's learned from other people, detectives in this case, in the books, that's given him the sort of wherewithal to go and solve his own crimes.
Yeah, they're sort of crime fiction disguised as football books.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Danny had been sitting at the table for over an hour, scribbling in his new notebook, trying not to forget anything. He had used the memory tricks to recall the black people carrier, the three men, the car's registration number. Now he was imagining he was there again, trying to capture every detail. The burglar, the porter cabins, Sam Roberts. If he could remember smells and sounds and even the cold air, it would trigger other memories. He'd heard a crime writer say that once on TV. Use your five senses. I had a bit of homework to do, Danny said, realising his dad was waiting for an answer.
Now, from someone who grew up reading Roy of the Rovers, you get very lucky and actually started writing the Roy of the Rovers books.
I did. I didn't actually apply for it or anything like that. What happened was I got a phone call, and because I'd done a few football books, the people who'd bought the rights to Roy the Rovers, who were called Rebellion Publishing, they were looking for an author to write children's fiction about Roy the Rovers. And they phoned me up out of the blue, and it was like the dream job, really. Just because one of the things that got me into reading was Roy the Rovers, the comics in the sort of the 1980s, I suppose, maybe late 70s. And then I started, I got the opportunity to actually write the books to do with the stories, and that's been brilliant. I've really enjoyed that, and it's kind of like circular, isn't it? Like I got into reading through that comic, and now I definitely try to write the Roy the Rovers books and the books about Rocky, his sister, with a view to children who might be reluctant readers, because that's I think that's a really important thing for me, is when I write my books, is that I'm thinking about me, like as a child who really struggled to read, like trying to write books that everyone can enjoy and aren't too, I suppose, aren't too wordy or aren't intimidating in any way. So Roy the Rovers was a perfect opportunity to do that.
And we'll have some news about Roy of the Rovers' little sister Rocky for World Book Day later on in today's show. But it's not just football, it's also you also write about rugby too.
I do. I suppose like, I'm more into football, to be honest, but I like rugby and I've been to watch a bit of rugby. I've been to Twickenham a few times with my daughter and I noticed that there weren't rugby books for children. There was very few books about rugby, fiction books for children. So that's where that came from, really. It was and the knowledge and an interest, I wouldn't call it a passion, in rugby. And I thought that's a gap in the market. And I think that's something you have to do as a writer, is if you have to write about what you're passionate about, what you love, what you're interested in. But you also have to think about what people want to read as well and what there isn't there that teachers, librarians, parents might want to put in front of children. So that the rugby union books came from that. But I have written a few rugby league books as well, coming from West Yorkshire, where rugby league's the more dominant code. I've written a few rugby league books too, which I enjoyed as well.
Now, it's not just sport, because we heard at the beginning of our chat a clip from The Angel of Grasmere. So another passion is history and historical fiction. What inspired you to write about historical fiction and about war?
I think my reading sort of moved. I still read about football, but it's moved more broadly. So I've started to read about other things that interest me. And I think war and history have always really interested me. And so I was reading I was reading war fiction, but I was also reading autobiographies or testimony of people who've been involved in war. A lot of that stuff is aimed at adults. And I think a lot of the history books, there's quite a few cliches in the history of war, that what I wanted to do was write books for children that show it as close as possible to what it was like. And that's based on testimony. And funnily enough, like for me, going back to what my job used to be, like the best source of material for me is the Imperial War Museum has an online archive of thousands and thousands of interviews with men and women who've been involved in various 20th and 21st century war situations. And I listen to them, and that's where my stories come from, to try and make them authentic. But I don't, if you've not been on the Imperial War Museum website, their audio archive is extraordinary, and you can search it by the town that you're from, or by a regiment, or by a battle or a war. You can search it in all sorts of different ways. You could search it, for instance, you could research like milkmen that have been involved in war situations, fell runners who have been involved in war situations. And it's a wonderful, almost infinite resource for people, you know, for just general people, but also for me as a writer. That's where I get the ideas from, because with war, you don't have to make it up, because so many things have happened. And in a way, for me, I think to be more authentic and to be as close to the testimony of those who've suffered war is the best way to go about it.
The second half had just started when the protesters spilled onto the pitch. They were louder now, and their voices echoed around the ground. Others had come down from the terraces to join in, inspired by the speeches at half-time. It was hard to focus on the game, for me and for everyone. The referee stopped the game, and the protesters began to sing. First a few voices, then more. "Onward, Christian soldiers, marching as to war." I stood and listened, close to the centre circle, stretching my legs to keep my muscles warm. "It's not going to go away," a voice behind me said. I looked round to see Sid Wheelhouse, the defender who had given me nothing all game. He was standing with Summers, the young Grimsby keeper. I nodded. Wheelhouse was right. These people were not going anywhere, and nor was the war.
Joe, I are reading from Over the Line, the first book in the Conquer series. And that first book was a sort of crossover. It was football, but it also was war.
Over the Line's more about footballers who actually went to fight in what was called the Footballers' Battalion. So, you know, as there were like the Accrington Pals, like a group of soldiers from the same streets, there were also professional groups of soldiers, like a lot of accountants fought together, and a lot of rugby players fought together, and a lot of footballers fought together as well. And it was a way of recruiting people, so there'd be among their people that they're familiar with. And that's what Over the Line's about.
We heard Joe Eyre narrating that, and your other narrators have included Elaine Fellows, Fraser Hanfield, Anna Gilthorpe and Lucy Brownhill. Do you have any choice in who is the voice of your audiobooks?
Sometimes, yeah, it's a really good question. Like sometimes, although not always, they sort of think of three, four people they thought think might be the right sort of voice for it. Usually a northern voice, they like to, because a lot of my books are set in the north with northern characters in England. So I get a lot of northern sounding voices, and they send me a range of voices, and I listen to them with my wife and daughter, and we decide which voice we think is the most appropriate for the character and the subject. But I mean, in the end, stuff like that, I do tend to leave to the publishers, because I think in a way they know best. I'm not, although to be fair, I do listen to a lot of audiobooks as well, but I suppose, like, if there's a glaring voice that I don't think would be right for it, then I would choose one of the other ones. But on the whole, I might give an opinion, but it's more down to the publisher, really.
You have read books before. Do you not fancy doing some of your audiobooks yourself?
No. I listen to a lot of audiobooks when I'm driving or when I'm doing stuff around the house, like decorating or something. And the voice makes a big difference. Like, if it's an accomplished voice where someone's reading it really well, it makes such a difference to the book that you're listening to. I think, I don't think I'm good enough. I think there's much better people out there. So I tend to duck out of that.
Is it important to you that your books are available in alternative formats for people, for whatever reason, don't have a relationship with print?
Absolutely. And I think it's really important for my books to be available, and all books to be available to as many people as possible, because of what I used to do, obviously, at the Recording Centre in Leeds, and knowing, having worked with the students that we were recording the books for, and knowing what a difference it made to them and how grateful they were for us for getting the book that they needed done quite quickly. So I'm completely aware of that. And in other issues, like I write for Barrington Stoke, and they design and edit to an extent all their books so that children in particular who have dyslexia or visual stress or other things going on can read them too. So I think the broader it can be, the better. And I'm really pleased that all the history ones are audiobooks. I think about a quarter of my books are available in audio, which I think on the whole is a reasonable strike rate, but obviously I'd prefer them all to be available on audio.
Well, there are loads available in the RNIB Talking Books Library, including...
None of the men Joss fought with are there to remember him, she complained. Mum's in the house, I'm up here, neither of us are at the church. Just Dad and a few other men who didn't know Joss like I do. Like I did. No reply, as a warm wind swept up the side of the fell. You could have gone to the service, Tarn said to Peter, seeing as you're a boy. I wanted to be here with you, Peter replied quietly.
Another clip of Elaine Fellows reading from Angel of Grasmere by my guest Tom Palmer. And we'll return to that chat in a moment after we find out what books are available free this World Book Day from RNIB. Here are four books for early readers. First up, from the Adventures of Paddington, Farm Escape.
It was a beautiful sunny day when Paddington arrived at the city farm with a huge batch of his finest marmalade sandwiches for Baz. As he looked around, Paddington discovered the farm was an incredible place and that his sandwiches were rather popular with the animals. A large pig came and gobbled some of them up.
Scoff, scoff.
Hey, I think you've forgotten your manners, said Paddington.
Chris Dyer, reading from The Adventures of Paddington, Farm Escape. A £1 World Book Day book that's free in audio from RNIB. As is Fox and Son Tailors by Paddy Donnelly. Let's hear from the author.
I'm Paddy Donnelly, the author and illustrator of Fox and Son Tailors, which is one of the £1, €1.50 books for World Book Day. So it's set in a world where the animals have no tails. The foxes invented tails and they sell them in their little shop. Rory is the young fox and his dad, they make tails for all the animals. The dad has all of these rules for making tails and Rory wants to make amazing tails with lots of colours and spikes and slime and no rules.
On a busy little street in a busy little town where lots of busy little and big animals went about their busy daily lives, there was a shop called Fox and Son Tailors. The shop was owned and run by a fox called Fox and his son, Rory. Rory's dad, Fox, was a tailor. His granddad was a tailor before that, and his great-granddad was a tailor before that. Animals came from all over to have their tails made by him. Rory helped his dad in the shop by carrying stock and washing windows and scraping the worms off a porcupine's spiky quills. That sort of thing. One of his jobs was to measure the customers so that their tails would be the perfect size. Sometimes that wasn't so easy. He needed a very tall ladder and a very long tape measure for a giraffe who came in for a fitting. And he didn't know where to start when a mummy rabbit brought all her little bunnies in so they could be measured. They hopped everywhere.
Once again, that's Chris Dyer. This time he was reading Fox and Son Tailors by Paddy Donnelly. Available free from RNIB, as is Pokemon, the Epic Pocket Guide.
What are Pokemon? Pokemon are creatures of all shapes and sizes, each with their own special abilities. They live happily in the wild, but can form a deep bond with a human trainer and become a friend for life. These creatures come in an incredible variety of types. You can find electric, grass, and even ghost types. It is a curious fact that Pokemon love to battle. Some enjoy it as a sport, while others see it as a chance to unlock awesome new abilities. Pokemon can communicate with each other, but very few can speak to humans. It takes a long time for trainers to build up a rapport with their partner. For instance, Ash has a very strong friendship with Pikachu. Pokemon live in a world divided into many beautiful and diverse regions. Some Pokemon can be found almost everywhere, like Butterfree. Others are incredibly rare, like the elusive Mew. Most Pokemon don't stay in the same form for all their lives, but change into completely new forms. This ability is called evolution, where, for example, a cute little Bounsweet evolves into an elegant Serena.
That's Chris Dyer again, reading from Pokemon, the Epic Pocket Guide, a World Book Day £1 book that you can get free in audio from RNIB. And finally, in this section for early readers, friend of the show Joseph Coelho has written All Poems Aloud.
Hello, I'm Joseph Coelho, author of this World Book Day title, All Poems Aloud. They're a series of fun poems that you can read by yourself or with friends and family or indeed out loud to a whole audience. The book is all about having fun with poems. I wish you the best of luck when you get reading.
The power of a poem. A poem has the power to build the highest tower, to paint the prettiest flower. Poem has the power. In that tower of flowers, you may find a blooming power. As you paint with pollen and petal, you'll find a rose can test your mettle. A poem has the skill to cure any ill, turn thoughts to windmills. Poem has the skill. As new ideas spin, the problems they're curing will waft away with time, all because of a little rhyme. A poem has the capability to conquer all hostility, to play a song of tranquility. A poem has the capability. Words can hurt and soothe, but you'll make the spiky smooth. Apply a sentence like a balm. Use a poem to heal and calm. A poem has the might to give your passion bite, to let your words take flight. A poem has the might. Your words might change a mind, inspire someone to be kind, or your words might roar with the bite of a dinosaur.
David Anthony Monteith, reading All Poems Aloud by Joseph Coelho. Blind and partially sighted children, and any children unable to read standard print due to a print impairment, are able to choose one free audio or braille book from the World Book Day list. Just call the RNIB helpline on 0303 123 9999 or email helpline@rnib.org.uk to get your free book.
For everyone who loves books, this is Read On, the audiobook show on RNIB Connect Radio.
RNIB Talking Books provides more than 1 million audiobooks every year to people with sight loss and is now completely free for all blind and partially sighted people in the UK. The RNIB Library is the largest of its kind in Europe and offers a wide range of fiction and non-fiction titles, which readers can access on CD, on USB, or as a digital download, so that you can listen how you choose, whether at home or on the go. To find out more about the RNIB Library or to sign up for your free membership, call the RNIB helpline on 0303 123 9999 or visit www.rnib.org.uk/library.
Tarn found it hard to believe that school was going to start again after the summer holidays. But even though Britain was about to be invaded, there was no getting out of school when your dad was the head teacher. On that first morning back, her dad had already left an hour before, so Tarn's mum saw her off to school. "Do you want me to walk with you, love?" Mum asked. "You're a bit early." Tarn was already staring across at St Oswald's Church on the opposite side of the road that ran through Grasmere. She had a plan about what she wanted to do before school that morning, her first day of a new school year without Joss there to cheer her on. "I'm fine, thanks." Tarn gave her mum a hug, then walked across the road and, ignoring the gate further along, bolted over the wall into the churchyard, just the way her brother used to when he was her age.
Elaine Fellows, reading from Angel of Grasmere by my guest Tom Palmer. Can you tell us more about that book?
Yeah, so when I was writing, two of my other books are set in Cumbria. Armistice Runner is about a girl who's a fell runner who does races in Cumbria. And After the War is about a group of children, Jewish children, who survived the Holocaust and came to live in Windermere after the Second World War. They were known as the Windermere children. You might have heard of them. While I was researching those, I came across stories of soldiers who were deserters from the First and Second World War, who actually hid in the countryside and in Cumbria, hid among the fells, like up on the tops, you know, for months and months, even years, up on the fells to avoid going back to war. Many of them had deserted because they had PTSD and were really messed up by being in war and just couldn't face going back. And I wanted to write a story about one of them. So it's called Angel of Grasmere. It's about a girl who thinks her brother's been killed at Dunkirk, but in fact, he's up on the fells hiding because he's so messed up by the war. He doesn't want to go back to fight. And this character, who's called Joss, because he's with PTSD, he's utterly guilt-ridden and really traumatized. So what he does is he starts to try to do good deeds for people in the village and around in the farms around where he's hiding. So, and he becomes known as this mythical figure as the Angel of Grasmere. Now, I suppose it's about whatever his circumstances are, like trying to do something good, trying to take part in the community that he's living in or living next to. So that's where the idea came from. But ultimately, to be quite honest, I live in West Yorkshire. It's about 2 hours from Cumbria, from the heart of Cumbria. So I just love going to Cumbria, and I try to set my books where I like going. So the books I'm writing now are set in Cornwall. So I do, in the same way, like I got into reading and writing through football because I love and feel comfortable with football. I love and feel comfortable with Cumbria and Cornwall, which is why I choose to write books in those places.
Now, we'll get into places you've written about in a moment, but in Angel of Grasmere, We've got hindsight now, and we know the Nazis never really reached the shores of UK. But at the time, it was a real and present danger that the Nazis could invade the UK.
Yeah, it was. And this is, to be honest, and you're absolutely bang on with the hindsight thing. We look at it and we know they didn't invade this country, but it's kind of astonishing that they didn't. It was a given that they were going to. They had plans to do it. It was all planned and it was all going to happen. And we didn't really have much left after Dunkirk. And obviously the Battle of Britain and other things, and then the Germans invading Russia sort of led to them not invading this country. And it's all those the fears at the time for those communities, they kind of, they almost knew that what had happened to Holland and France and Belgium, et cetera, and Poland, et cetera, was going to happen here. And it was just a matter of time. And I think for me, when you're writing about history, is that hindsight is the key thing. So what I do is I try to listen to the testimony that I mentioned earlier. But what I also do, in the case of Angel Grasmere, it's set in Grasmere in the Lake District from 1940 to 1942-3, or, well, towards the end of the war, really. What I did was I read the newspapers for that whole period for that area. So the Westmorland Gazette, I read the newspapers, and that immediately gives you a flavour without the hindsight of history. It's like the raw material of history before we put in our, well, of course they didn't invade, and how absurd to think they could have invaded. But there were plans for the Germans to parachute into the fells in Cumbria and invade and get a foothold and a bridgehead to invade the rest of the country from Cumbria. There were similar plans in Cornwall. And just like you say, like without hindsight, it makes it much more fascinating. And if you can make your character really believe those things are going to happen because they can't look into the future, for me, it makes it a better read, really.
Now, we did talk about Cornwall and your travels into the Lake District, but you've been much further afield in both research for your books and on holiday, I suppose, to places such as New Zealand and even Ghana in Africa.
Yeah, I was lucky. I think early on when I was getting published by Puffin, I used to get larger advances than I do generally, than people do generally now. And so, like with the Ghana book, I wanted to set a book. It was to do with a footballer from Ghana being trafficked to Europe, but it was also to do with fair trade chocolate. And I felt like there was no way I could write about Ghana and set a story in Ghana without going. And because I had a decent advance, it meant I could spend about £1,500 on a trip to Ghana. And it was so worth it because it meant that it's a much more authentic book. Like, I'd been to a cocoa bean growing area and met the farmers and met the families and been to the schools of the children. I've been to non-fair trade cocoa growing areas. I've met young footballers who aspire to come and play football in Europe. I've met people who work with footballers as well in Ghana, and I've been to football matches. And so because of that, the book is much more authentic. And I think writing a book in a set in another country and not visiting that country, people are going to spot it. If people know that country or have been to that country, they're going to spot it. It just won't be authentic. So I do try to travel to places, and I've been really lucky to set books in Moscow, Ghana, New Zealand, the Arctic. And I've been all over. But now that I'm not getting quite such big advances, I tend to set my books in Cumbria.
But you even went to the extremes for Ghost Stadium, camping for a night in a football stadium on your own.
I did, yeah. I was really lucky. Wrexham, this is 12 plus years ago, allowed me to sleep on their football pitch before their American Revolution. They let me sleep on the pitch all night because I wanted. It's about three children who sleep illegally inside a football stadium in a tent one night, and I wanted to know what it was like. Was it spooky? Was it scary? What, you know, what do you hear? What do you smell? What do you see? What's it like when the sun comes up, goes down, and all that sort of thing? So I used all that research, and it's being a writer is good in lot. If you want to see something and respectfully want to understand someone's world or an area of life that you don't understand, if you go to people and say to them, I'm trying to write this book about this and I want to describe it properly, then they generally, they fall over themselves to help you so that you can describe their world authentically. The book I'm writing now is going to involve fishing boats going out from Falmouth. And so I'm hoping to, I know some people down there now, I'm hoping that someone will sort of let me go out on a fishing boat with them or something like that, just so I can describe it properly, instead of just remembering stuff from little pleasure cruises I've been on, which is probably very different to actually going out on a proper fishing boat. So I do like to do that in-depth research, A, because it's important for the books to be authentic, but B, because, you know, you get to do fun things that you'd never get to do otherwise.
Rocky was talking and laughing so much that she couldn't breathe, hugging all her old teammates one by one as they stumbled off the coach, looking around themselves like they were stepping onto the moon. She felt hugely excited, or emotional, she was not sure which. All the time she kept her eyes locked on Fionn. She had wanted more than the brief tight hug she'd had from her too. She needed time with her, but that couldn't happen, not yet. As soon as the Melchester Rovers team arrived, Mountain Heights School hosted a welcome party for them outside in the eating area, a lovely view of the sun high above the hills as a backdrop. Food, drink, speeches, that sort of thing.
Now, we mentioned her earlier, but the Rocky of the Rovers will be popping up this World Book Day.
Yes, and it's been really lovely. Writing the Roy of the Rovers books, when I was given the commission about five or six years ago, roughly, and they asked me to write about Roy of the Rovers, and I just felt, and this is before the sort of the Lionesses revolution, I just felt I'd been into a lot of schools and a lot of girls were playing football as well as boys, and I felt it was really important to create an extra character. So I created Roy, but as a, based on the original Roy from the comics, but I created Rocky as a sister for him, who was frustrated because there weren't football teams for him. She kind of, in a way, she took over after three books. Instead of doing the books about Roy with her as a sort of a support character, she became the main character in each book, each alternative book. So there was a book about Roy, then a book about Rocky, and the books about her actually sold better. So the publisher asked me to stop doing the Roy books, and now I've done a series called Soccer Diaries about Rocky, and then there's four books now about her, and I really love writing her. I mean, I've written a lot about girls' sport. My only child is a girl, and she was a runner more than anything, and did gymnastics as well. So I've written a lot of stories about girls doing sport, because I think up until 3 or 4 years ago, there weren't that many books about girls doing sport. And now, fortunately, there's a lot more. I think since the Lionesses have done what they've done, and other sports, like women and girls sport is getting a lot more, as it should, attention. It's coming through in fiction from lots of different authors now. So that's been a really good thing. And writing Rocky's fab. I really enjoy it as well. So in the World Book Day book, Rocky takes the lead. She's done well in Britain, and she gets a scholarship at a college in the United States in California. And there's a lot of British girls who've done this. They've gone over to play, to get scholarships, or gone over to play football in the States. And Rocky goes and does that. But what happens is the team that she played for in England comes over to play her school team in America. And this sort of throws her, because she's kind of got two very different worlds. She's got home with her family and her old mates, but she's got America where she's at college, and she's kind of grown and evolved to be a different person. And so when, you know, that thing, we all have different compartments of our lives. When two compartments of your lives sort of come together, it's difficult to be the consistent person you maybe want to be. So it's like being out with your mates, or being with your gran or something like that. You're a different side of yourself. And so it's about how she comes to terms with who she is and what she wants to do in the future as well. And I've read like loads of autobiographies of footballers from Beth Mead to some of the American footballers. And that's really helped, because I think a lot of people, when they get good at a sport, they have to give so much of themselves over to it. It means they have to compromise with what they give time to in the rest of their lives. And I learned a lot from reading the autobiographies of other sports people, particularly sports women in this case, to achieve that, hopefully.
Let's just talk about the covers for a second, because the Stalker Diaries, they remind me about a wee bit of manga, actually.
I think they've gone for that. I think you're absolutely right. They want to make them look like lively and mangery, and the characters are in that style. I think they consciously chose the artist to do that. So I'm glad you said that, really, and I think it works. And going into school libraries, manga is really, really popular, especially with people who aren't that into traditional, you know, novel and prose reading. They really enjoy manga. So I think it's a good way of getting extra people into it. And also it does sort of nod back to the fact that Roy the Rovers did actually originate as a comic.
As opposed to the Conker series, which they look, I'm not sure, but they look to be designed by the same artist of the covers. Can you describe the Angel of Grasmere cover for us?
Yes, they're done by someone called Tom Closey Cole, I think I pronounced that right. And he uses silhouettes of people. So on Angel of Grasmere, there's a picture of the fells and a tarn, so one of the lakes halfway up the fells. And there's a silhouette of the main girl character sort of towards the forefront. And in the background, a bit further back, you've got a silhouette of a soldier standing by the lake, and it's trying to get the two main characters, and that's what he does in all those covers. You tend to have a silhouette character with more of a natural picture behind it. So like one of the books, Arctic Star, is set at sea, so you've got two characters in silhouette with the Arctic Ocean behind them, and it's kind of, I suppose it's, you don't actually see what the people look like, but you get an idea of it. And I think covers like that, they're more arty and less cartoony. They sort of draw people into the story and hopefully, you know, are attractive in a different way, because they're a different sort of book, aren't they, I suppose?
Now, we've talked about the Stalker Diaries and Rocky Takes the Lead coming out for World Book Day. Just finally, what else are you doing for World Book Day?
I've got all sorts of plans. I think I always do a World Book Day message, sort of a 10-minute video, which... and the lights gets used in schools, like probably about like 400 or 500 schools might use it. I do a video, and this year I'm going to do it in Cumbria, because I've done three books set in Cumbria now. I thought it would be nice to sort of do a message from, what I wanted to do is do it from the top of one of the fells, like, so quite high up. So there's really good views. And I know a lot of children haven't seen what it looks like on the top of a mountain. And I just thought that'd be a really nice thing to do. That's one of the reasons I want to do a film from up there. But the other reason is, going back to what I said before, I you know, it's a good excuse to go up a mountain. And so that's what I'll be doing in mid-February, as long as the weather warms up a bit.
The Mountain Heights school coach, Abby, clapped her hands once she could see everyone had a plate of food and a drink. She stood there beaming next to her assistant coach, Jessie, who was also Rocky's mentor at the school. "Welcome, welcome, welcome," Abby called out. "We are so pleased to have Melchester Rovers over here in the States. You are very welcome. And although you are here to play a game of soccer, you are here as our guests." The former USA international footballer paused. "You need something? Just ask." Rocky watched her old teammates. Some were looking around, glancing at each other. Abby had used the word soccer, not football. How had that made British players feel? Had they even registered it? They clearly had. It had taken Rocky a long time to get used to that word, soccer. It still sounded weird. Maybe she hadn't quite got used to it yet.
A final clip of Tom Palmer's book, Rocky Takes the Lead, a Soccer Diaries book for World Book Day. Thanks again to Tom Palmer, and we'll chat to him again after he's judged the World Book Day writing competition for children as run by RNIB. More about that in a future show. But for now, let's end the show with some more free books. Here are four books for fluent readers. First for fluent readers is The Soccer Diaries, Rocky Takes the Lead by Tom Palmer. Let's hear from the author.
Hello, I'm Tom Palmer. And I'm the author of Rocky Takes the Lead, which is a £1 World Book Day book. And Rocky Takes the Lead is a story of Rocky Race. She's a young British footballer. She goes to the United States of America. And the story is about her two lives. It's about her American team, her school team, who plays against the team she used to play for in the UK. And it's about how when you've got two groups of friends, sometimes it's difficult to bring them together. But hopefully Rocky finds a way.
"When do they get here?" Kim asked. "Tomorrow," Rocky said. And now her heart began to beat faster. Because the following day, her other friends, her old football team from England, Melchester Rovers, were coming to play a friendly against her school team.
Laura Bryden, reading from The Soccer Diaries, Rocky Takes the Lead, a free book from RNIB for World Book Day. Also available is The Fart That Broke World Book Day by Stephen Mangan.
Hello, my name's Stephen Mangan, and my £1 book for World Book Day 2025 is called The Fart That Broke World Book Day. Imagine, it's World Book Day, everyone at school is very excited, but something smells a bit off. Why are all the teachers farting? Who's that kid dressed as an alien? Why is there a spaceship parked behind a hedge? All the drawings are done by my little sister Anita. Find out if our hero can save the day, the fart that broke World Book Day.
My teacher, Mr. Brownstein, not his real name, kicked open the door of the classroom and we all fell silent. You didn't mess with Mr. Brownstein. As usual, he threw the pile of books he was holding onto his desk. As usual, he pulled off his green jacket with the leather elbow patches and hooked it on the back of the door. As usual, he kicked off his shoes and slid his disgusting damp and sweaty socks into the pair of tragic slippers he kept by the bin. And, as usual, he took out a crusty yellowing handkerchief and blew his nose into it with four short, sharp bursts. But then, he did something he had never done before.
Chris Dyer, reading from The Fart That Broke World Book Day by Stephen Mangan. Available for free from RNIB. As is the £1 book, The Wolf Trials, by Kieran Millwood Hargrave.
I'm Kieran Millwood Hargrave, and my book, The Wolf Trials, is a £1 book for World Book Day 2025. The Wolf Trials is part of my Geomancer series, which includes The Shadow of the Wolf Queen and The Storm and the Seahawk. In The Wolf Trials, we follow Era, the daughter of the fearsome Wolf Queen, as she takes part in the Wolf Trials, where children compete to become part of the Riders, an elite group of sea wolf riders and the most trusted warriors. But will she succeed? Will she be recognised? And if she isn't, will she survive the wolf trials?
It was a fearsome sight. Sand flew beneath mighty paws, cheers and howls filling the air, as Queen Seren rode out from her castle of broken boats on her wolf Tej. In her red sari, gold thread and jewellery glinting like armour from her black hair and brown wrists and bare ankles, with her spear slung across her back, she looked like a goddess, or a demon. Following her were the red-cloaked riders, her best warriors, also on wolfback. The Wolf Queen and her army. The entire castle came out to watch as they thundered into the distance, across the lakes to greet her fleet before crossing the sea to defeat the uprising in the marbled hills. As soon as the sand settled and the racket faded, the crowd seemed to breathe out in relief. But no one was more relieved than Era, the Wolf Queen's daughter. Concealed among the skeletons of the ship's hulls that formed her mother's castle. "Don't hurry back," she whispered after the vanished wolves. Then turned and slid down the upturned hull, her clothes snagging on barnacles. She shouldn't have been watching the army leave. She shouldn't have been there at all.
Kate Louise Okello, reading from The Wolf Trials by Kieran Millwood Hargrave. Available for free from RNIB. As is, This Story is a Lie by Benjamin Dean. Let's hear from the author.
Hi, my name is Benjamin Dean and I'm the author of This Story Is a Lie. This Story Is a Lie is a mystery thriller set in a school that has been chosen by a special program to give two students the chance to make their dreams of success and stardom come true. The Perfect Four are a group of the most popular kids in school and everybody just assumes they'll be the only ones in the running to win a place in the program. But when main character Harley is announced in one of their places, anonymous blog posts are published revealing dark secrets of those desperate to win their place.
I know you want to ask me what happened that day. Everybody wants to know. I see the stares in the hallway, hear the whispers behind my back. Even the teachers are looking at me with something that's not quite pity, more curiosity, like they want the answers too. But the truth is, I feel like I hardly know anything. It's a blur in my mind at best, and a completely black void at worst. Maybe it's for the best that I can't remember everything. I don't want to live this nightmare anymore. Still, I see you all watching. Even now, when you know the outcome, you won't let me move on. Not until I tell you my side of the story. So if that's what it takes, have it your way. Let me take you back to the start. But just one important thing before we get started. Remember, their story was a lie.
Our final World Book Day title available from RNIB is This Story Is a Lie. It's written by Benjamin Dean and was read there by Joshua Riley. Blind and partially sighted children and any children unable to read standard print due to a print impairment are able to choose one free audio or braille book from the World Book Day list of 13 titles. Just call the RNIB helpline on 0303 123 9999 or email helpline@rnib.org.uk to get your free book. That's all we've got time for on today's show. We'll be back at the same time next week. But if you can't wait that long, this and over 400 other episodes of Read On are available to download as a podcast. Just search for RNIB Read On in your favourite podcast app. But remember our daily show, Talking Books, featuring the best the RNIB library has to offer, that we're allowed to play on here. That's every day at 2 p.m. or 10 p.m. if you prefer a book at bedtime. The whole schedule is at rnib.org.uk/connect-radio.
Books and accessible reading on RNIB Connect Radio.